Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Hawa Tuxknusum Salama, thank you for tuning in. Welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on KTOO's YouTube and Facebook pages. Today, we chat about some First Friday events, including the next solo artists exhibition opening at the Alaska State Museum, Embrace, Reflect, Release, by mixed media sculptor and performance artist Maisha Callahan Freet. Then, a group of four women, three artists, and one marine biologist, bringing the beauty of the deep sea to the public through international art and science events, are doing it through the Unseen Ocean Collective Art Show, which is opening at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council this Friday, February 6th. Megan Jones is here to tell us more. And we begin today with Lisa Weisler, author of Capital Crude, The Impact on Oil of Oil on Alaska Politics. Lisa will have an interview and a Q&A session with Pat Race at Alaska Robotics tomorrow, February 5th at 6 p.m. And then on Friday, she'll have a book signing at Hearthside's downtown location during First Friday from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Gunathchi, Shaigudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to welcome you to the studio, Lisa. Wasaiti, how are you?
Thank you. Very well.
Excellent. So let's start with first a little bit about your background. I know you came here in, I think it was 1980. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you did here through your life.
Oh, dear. Okay. I came in 1980 for a temporary job with the U.S. Forest Service. I actually had a forestry degree. And, it's just supposed to be a summer job. And like many people who are still here.
Oh, that story.
I fell in love with Juno and I stayed. And the temporary job ended. I really looking for a job and ended up at the legislature. And mm-hmm. discovered a whole new world that I really, really enjoyed. And so I worked many legislative sessions. Also worked for the Department of Natural Resources as a special assistant. And I went to law school and then worked for the Coastal Program. And then I was an attorney for the state for the Coastal Program. Mm. Back to the legislature for a while, and then I ended my career as an oil and gas attorney for the state.
Oil and gas attorney for the state.
Yes.
Okay. And then you retired?
I did retire, but I wasn't quite done yet. So, yeah, I worked another session for Senator Hollis French in 2012. I worked a year for Governor Walker, his first year, and then my last main job with the state was with Representative Andy Josephson in 2017.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you recently relocated for retirement down to Bellingham?
I did, regretfully. But, as you age, you start to think about that.
Yeah.
And so, yes, 2024, we moved to Bellingham.
Okay. That's a beautiful location.
It's lovely, and it's just down the channel.
Yeah, it's just down the way.
Yeah,
exactly. Not too far.
Exactly.
It's a little sister city.
Right.
That's so cool. Okay, so how did the idea for this book, Capital Crude, mm-hmm. The Impact of Oil on Alaska Politics, how did this book come about?
Well, it's a combination of things. One, during the year I worked for Governor Walker, I wrote a history of oil tax credits, which were at the time causing a lot of problems for the state. And in doing the research for that, I discovered just so much interesting history about not just oil taxation, but just oil generally and the legislature. And the paper itself really sort of started that idea. The other part of it is I started working for the legislature in 1981 in March, and in June that year there was a coup, what's called the coup, when some Republicans and Democrats actually overthrew the Democratic majority. And most of us from that time felt like there was a big change in Alaska politics. Something happened then related to oil, of course. And what I wanted to do, I knew the story after 1981, but I didn't know the story leading up to that. Were things really different?
Mm.
And so that was also a part of what drove me to write the book, is to explore what came before.
Mm. And what did you find?
Oh, so interesting. That, yeah, there was a profound change and marked much more clearly than you would expect. I think this is something that's happened across the country in terms of corporations dealing with government. But because Alaska has such a small population and we have one major industry, the story was just so clear.
Mm.
So if you start back in the 1960s when there was oil, it was in Cook Inlet, the North Slope, the big fields hadn't been discovered yet. The legislature, governors were skeptical of the oil industry, and they were willing to raise the oil tax, which, by the way, our first oil and gas protection tax was in 1955, before oil was discovered, and it was a Representative Irene Ryan who wrote it, the first tax. Yeah, and she was like the state's first woman geologist, first woman to fly solo in Alaska. So anyhow.
Her name is Irene Ryan?
Irene Ryan.
Also the name of a famous actor who...
Yeah, it was.
As well.
Doing research on her,
you
lost an Irene. Yes.
You had to discover the
exactly,
difference.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So anyhow, in the 60s, these are people who had just come out of being a territory and feeling very... the canneries and the mining interests had all kept the state, the territory, from really thriving.
Mm.
And so they were very skeptical of another industry coming to Alaska to exploit Alaska's resources. And so it was bipartisan support for things like taxation, regulation. You get into the 70s, and now we've got Prudhoe Bay and how, you know, that's massive, massive oil field. And again, the skepticism was still there of the industry and a real willingness to protect Alaska's interest. I mean, they made fun of the these oil men coming up from Texas. And so you saw pretty strong laws and taxation on the oil industry through the 70s.
Mm.
And then as we get to the coup.
Mm.
And now in 1980, 1981, that is when the most oil was coming out of the North Slope.
And is that because of the pipeline? Was that like did that change things a little bit?
Well, the pipeline made everything possible.
More increased the production and ability,
well,
right?
Well, yeah. I mean, without the pipeline, there would have been no oil market.
Right.
Well, I say that. They might have gone over the top.
They would have figured it out.
Yeah,
right?
They would have figured it out.
Yeah.
But anyhow, yes, the oil pipeline was now fully functional.
Mm.
2 million barrels of oil a day going down the pipeline, and that was the peak production. Buckets of money. I mean, billions of dollars coming to the state. And so now you had oil money pouring in.
Mm.
And in fact, this coup, part of the issue was that there were rural Democrats who were feeling like they were cut out of the process for how to divvy up the money.
Mm.
And so they went over to the other side. And so that was the main driver. People I've talked to, interviews from the time, people say it was not necessarily the oil industry behind the coup.
Mm.
But they did get to take advantage of it in that there was one particular tax, corporate income tax, had changed, and it got changed to benefit the industry after the coup.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened. And it's when you really start to see a change in our politics, in Alaska politics, in the oil companies really getting involved in getting people elected who were going to keep taxes low on the industry and limit the amount of regulation that they would be subject to.
Mm-hmm.
And this necessarily landed mostly towards Republicans because that, you know, the free enterprise system, they had a less taxation, less regulation, governing philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so what had been a Democratic-leaning state now became a Republican-leaning state.
And this is in the 80s around that
This
time?
Was in the 80s. 1986 yeah. is when you really saw a dramatic switch in terms of how much money the companies were willing to throw into these races and just how much they were involved. So as I say, it was a very clear mark right in the 80s. And you saw that continuing all the way through the 80s, and really, I would say up until, now even, you know. I mean, Alaska's good in that it never got all the way to one side or another. Somehow there was always a little bit of a balance there, but by and large, it was on the conservative side of things. And eventually, the people who were being elected, who had this sort of anti-tax, anti-regulation mentality, it really came to an overarching anti-government philosophy. And over time, that started separating Alaskans from their government. And, you know, it was, don't tax us, give us our dividends. And the public side of government, the public services and things, really took a huge hit and continue to because there was never a fiscal plan. There was not a willingness to think about how to fund government with anything other than oil. And, well, going back to 1980, when the income tax was repealed, and that took everyone's skin out of the game there. The state's been dependent on this volatile oil revenue all this time.
Interesting. Yeah. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Lisa Weisler, who's the author of Capital Crude, The Impact of Oil on Alaska Politics. She will be having a Q&A session with Pat Race at Alaska Robotics tomorrow at 6 p.m., and then also a book signing at Hearthside Books downtown on First Friday from 4:30 to 7 p.m. I'm really curious about, you know, what you hope that folks will get out of reading this book.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things. One is just the history itself, you know, what you can learn from. It's so easy to see the mistakes, like getting rid of the income tax. So taking what lessons you can learn from reading it. But I've heard from people that it's so depressing seeing all the missed opportunities and things like that. But I see some hope coming in Alaska's future. And that goes to the ranked choice voting and the open primaries that is really seeing more of a balance now, like in the legislature where there's House and Senate, both majorities, multi-party majorities, Republican, independents, Democrats, non-affiliated. So that gives me hope, because what I'm hoping is people see what being anti-government gets the public.
So education and then being able to make their own choice, whether they agree or disagree with what you discovered, right? So, I mean, that's...
I think it's more about understanding. It's about electing people who are willing to use the tools of government to benefit Alaskans. And that is something that I feel did get lost through all these years, because there was this notion that government is bad, and it can be. We do see that, but it can be good too. But you have to elect the right people. You have to elect people that reflect your values and communities, and that is the takeaway. I mean, I have there's a quote at the end of my second edition that really sums it up. And it was by the Tanana Chiefs. And
you want to share it? Yeah.
Sure. Yes. Thank you. So this was the Tanana Chiefs conference, and they were responding to the mayor, Fairbanks mayor, doing some derogatory comments towards Alaska Natives. And what they said is, when we vote, we shape the kind of leadership we see in our communities. We elect those who reflect our values, who understand our history, who respect the diversity and dignity of our people, and who stand with, not against, the communities they serve. Let this moment be a wake-up call. Let it energize our efforts to register, to show up, and vote for leaders who will uplift and not divide. Our voice is our power in council meetings, in public forums, and especially at the ballot box. So I guess what I hope people take away is pay attention to who you are voting for and what their values are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you got any more writing in your future, Lisa?
Well, I'm just getting this book out, so.
Because you self-published this book. Was
I
that
did.
A process of learning how to do that?
Sort of. There is a website, you know, online draft to digital that you just plug in your book and your book's published.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Draft to digital.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. They put it out on Amazon and stuff, and there's hard copies. But the second edition came out of, I'm using Todd Communications out of Anchorage.
Okay.
They are a print broker, and they have printed the second edition. And so they deal with local bookstores, and also individuals can order from them. Much better quality, and they're Alaskan.
That's kind of cool. So you'll have the books available, hard copies at Hearthside. Obviously, you're going to be doing a book signing, so you'll have it
there's
there.
There's some at Alaska Robotics as well.
Okay. And mm-hmm. where can people find out more about this book and you?
Well, capitalcrude.com. is my website.
You have a web? Did you make the website?
Or I did.
You did. Look
I
at
did.
You.
Yeah.
Having fun. So it's kind of a fun project to.
It's been, you know, it's been a 10-year project.
Wow.
And yes, it has been fun.
To go from like the thought of writing a book.
Yes.
I mean, that's a daunting task, right? But I'm just saying, for those who might be hearing this, like if you have an idea, it's mm-hmm. possible. You can do the research. You can write the book. You can publish it yourself. You can make a website. Look at Lisa Weisler doing it, making it happen. And you can find out more about it and ask her questions tomorrow night at Alaska Robotics with Pat Race doing a Q&A at 6 p.m. That's Thursday, February 5th. And then Friday, Lisa will be down at Hearthside downtown for a First Friday book signing from 4:30 to 7. You can go to capitalcrude.com for more information. Lisa, it was a pleasure to meet with you and
too.
Chat
Thank
with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Gunther Cheese for being here today. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. And now, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. Alaska and Iceland have a lot in common. They're both cold, mountainous, and glaciated, and home to hot springs. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, there are 79 thermal springs in Alaska, concentrated on the Alaska Peninsula, the Aleutian Chain, southeast, and the interior near Fairbanks and Ruby. Many of these hot springs are warmed by volcanic activity and the fiery magma always boiling beneath the Earth's crust. Hot springs can be used to fuel power plants. In Iceland, 90% of the country's heating needs are met by geothermal activity. But the Earth's molten interior can also be used to produce the very staff of life. Bread. Icelandic hverabrød is a moist, sweet, slow-baked rye bread cooked in a wooden cask, or now more commonly, a bucket with a lid, buried near a thermal spring. According to Magnus Nilsson, author of the Nordic Baking Book, the Icelandic countryside is crisscrossed with bubbling holes in the ground that steam with the sweet scent of baking bread and the sulfurous perfume of volcanoes. If you don't have access to the Earth's magmatic heat, you can bake hverabrød in the oven. Low and slow is key. 12 hours at about 200 degrees in a tightly covered pot. Serve with smoked fish or meat or pickled herring. If you have leftovers, turn them into a soup called brødsuppe. Soak stale bread overnight in water flavored with lemon and raisins. Boil until thick and top with whipped cream. The poet Bill Holm must have had an interesting experience with brødsuppe. In his poem, Bread Soup, an old Icelandic recipe, he pronounces this menu alive as any animal, one that will sing inside you for a long time. find links to Bill Holmes' poem and a recipe for kverebrach at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube or Facebook pages. I'm Boston Christopher. This Friday, the Alaska State Museum opens its next in the series of solo exhibitions featuring artists from around Alaska. This time around, it's Maisha Callahan-Freet, mixed media sculptor and performance artist from Chugiak, Alaska. The show, Embrace, Reflect, Release, features time-based performance and mixed media sculptures along with visual art elements. There will be an opening on First Friday, of course, from 4:30 to 7 at the museum. And on Saturday, there's going to be a really cool exhibit tour with Maisha at 12:30 p.m. in the museum. Both events are free of charge, and that is awesome. Gunnith Cheesh, welcome in. Thank you so much for being here. Maisha Wasiati, how are you today?
Amazing. Juno is beautiful.
How long have you been in town this time?
We came in Sunday evening.
Sunday evening. Okay, got some pretty okay weather. Not too bad.
No, we love the fog. We love the rain.
Yes.
It's perfect.
I love that for you. And Jackie, welcome back. Wasiati, how are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's start with you, Jackie. Just remind folks about the solo exhibition artists, and this is like a two-year project over time and all that, right?
Yes. So we every couple of years we open a call statewide and ask artists to apply and send in a proposal of what they'll do with a show. And there's a committee that reviews those, and we select around six artists to have a show over a two-year period of time. And the next call we're going to be opening in the fall, so please keep an eye out for that. We'll have stuff up on the museum website. But yeah, there's one more after Maisha. The last is Shigen George, who's Juno-based. So yeah, Looking forward to Shigen's show as well.
So when you get these submissions, what's the process of review? How do you end up? I don't think it must be so hard to choose.
Oh my gosh, Boston, it's so hard. And really, there's just so many people I really hope apply again.
Yeah.
I try to put a different committee together every time, so different folks are reviewing, and really it's a process where, you know, many hours looking at it by different folks, and then we get together, and then also trying to create a diverse group of artists for that couple of years. So from different places around Alaska, doing different types of work.
Right.
So that's also a factor is just trying to keep that selection as diverse as possible.
Because you've had like large scale installation. You've had now obviously Maisha's doing some performance art along with the mixed media
and installation based sculpture. Yeah. I'm excited for you to hear about that.
Yeah.
We had Renan Caro did quilts.
And right.
Shigen does Chilcat and Raven's Tail weaving. So
Awesome. And, of course, you can go to lam.alaska.gov to find out about that information when it becomes available. And anyone around the state is eligible to apply?
Yes.
Okay, that's awesome. And so, Maisha, when you – so we're in 2026, and this first group was in 2024, I believe. Mm-hmm. So you applied like a while ago.
Was it? It was in 24
23.
Yeah. So like 3 years ago. And so when you thought about applying, did you know like what elements you might put into a show at that time, or has that idea morphed over?
It morphed.
Yeah.
My degree is in photography, digital media.
Mm.
But there is no photography or digital media in this show.
That's amazing.
But I was telling Jackie, it's just been a beautiful evolution, and to reflect on my proposal versus where I am now, I'm a totally different person.
Just, yeah.
You know, we're humans and ever changing, and I am leaning into that with this work, just making work as I'm sifting through these new way of beings that I crave.
Oh, that's so awesome. And you can find out more about Maisha's, well, her whole family is artists. And they have their own website, callahanfreet.com. That's CallahanFreet, callahanfreet.com. And you can find out about your partner and also your son,
yes,
who also make art and have their own individual pages there as well, and all the different projects y'all are working on. And that's kind of awesome. So you mentioned that your work had been, or your degree was in photography
and
digital media.
Mm-hmm.
And have you found that, so over these years, that you've been integrating those elements, or even like you said, taking them away and creating new elements? So I'm curious about that sort of evolution.
So I was leaning heavily into the time-based performance video.
Mm.
And as I'm trying to use less and less material, and I was like, well, my body goes everywhere with me.
Mm.
I want to start leaning into performance art. And so this will be my longest performance, which I'm really excited about, and just I don't want to be carrying things with me, and so anytime I can just use my body, I want to just use my body.
So this opening and the exhibit tour will both include some performance?
Only the opening.
Friday night you're going to do a live performance.
Yes.
But the exhibit has some filmed performance, or how does that work? No.
If you miss the performance, you just miss it.
Oh, wow. Oh, one time only. You got to be there. And is it going to be done more than once in that time period? How long is it?
No.
How long is the performance?
You should come.
I might, but that's why I got to figure out what time, because it's from the opening's from 4:30 to 7.
Yeah, so I'll start performing at 5:30.
5:30. Okay, all right.
Yes.
And that's just going to be a one-time deal.
Yes.
Okay, I gotcha.
But there's six pieces
yes.
in all. So if you miss the performance, the exhibit's up until April 4th, and there are also these incredible installation sculptural pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And then remnants from the performance that will be there, so you'll be able to still see what Maisha did during the performance.
I see. I saw one that you have on your lam.alaska.gov site, a sculpture. But tell me about the sculpture work that you do, Maisha.
For this show in particular,
yeah,
I have a net that I fashioned out of my own hair.
Oh, okay.
Just hair that I grew from 2013, and then I cut my hair in 2018 and put it in a bag because I said, oh, I know one day I will do something with this.
Right.
And so I really...
Also light to carry, right?
Very light. Very light. And I, you know, that's like an evolution of the self-portrait. And so it's like, oh, this is me.
Mm.
This is my essence. And so fashioned that into a net and really excited about that.
Oh, that's
and how
cool.
It came out and
yeah.
So.
Ah. And tell me about some of the other sculptures. I think the one on the website is it Death to Something?
Death to the Mother Was.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Tell me about that.
I had a dream that I made a coffin, and I said, oh, that's kind of crazy.
Mm.
But I really was reflecting on our son turning 18 and just motherhood has just been this long, constant grieving process for me because, you know, stages and he's 18. He does not need me the way that he used to need me. And I really want to lean into that and lean into the advisor role if he wants that. And so the coffin is covered in lumen prints from flowers that he planted for me that I saved, and I made 18 prints and then collaged the coffin out of it. And so it's the beauty in the grieving process that mothers go through.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous. Yeah, that's going to be beautiful. Yeah. And so I'm curious about, like, where your impulse was to begin making art. Was it when you were a kid or a teenager, or where did it come from?
My mother is a creative. My father is a creative. I can remember the first, like, memory of creating something. I made my brother this, I think it was a happy face, but I got everything out of the trash and, like, fashioned this birthday present for him and just, you know, just creating art. But it wasn't until I wanted to work in corporate America. Sun was shining outside. I'm sitting in a cubicle. And I was like, what am I doing?
That moment, right?
And I stood up and I went to my boss and I said, I have to quit.
Really?
And he was like, what's happening? And I was like, I want to go to art school. I was like, I won't be here. And that was mid-20s. So it was late going to get my degree, but always been interested in photography and taking pictures and, you know, finally making that leap. But it was like, oh, the sun's out. This is not going to be my life.
That's amazing that you hear that a lot, you know, or people feel that a lot. You know, you're stuck in something and you're like, why? How did I get here?
Yeah.
How did I get into this moment? And do I need, and then the fear that can overtake you and not needing and wanting to change, but, you know, the uncertainty, like, school costs money, right? Like, what does that mean? Will I be successful? Is that really what I want to commit to? Like, all those questions.
What is success?
Right. What does that mean?
I want to make art. I make art.
Yeah. That's success, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. I love that moment of discovery for people when they can feel that, you know? It can pass a lot of people by, and then other people, it changes their life. And it sounds like that's what it did for you. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, thank
I really
you.
Like that. And the fact that your partner and your son are also artists in their own right, like you, it came from your parents and you're passing it down. And tell me what does your son do?
I think everybody is an artist in their own way, but he is an amazing photographer. He is so willing to be part of the videos, our time-based performance, and gives ideas, and always a good model to stand in when we need him to. But making time-based performance videos with him is just so fun.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, sometimes doing these things, you just want to laugh. But once he really got, I can't laugh because, you know, mom wants to do this thing. But even with the laughter, it's still this beautiful process and really helps us bond as a family for me. Because there's no way to make this work without everybody gelling together.
Yeah, being on board. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's kind of awesome. And when you you mentioned that the death to being a mother, is that what it's called?
Death to the mother I once was.
Once was. Okay. And that came from, like, a dream that you had. How do is that where you get a lot of inspiration, is through dreams, or is there things that you see that go,
pay attention to my dreams.
Yeah.
I journal a lot, reading.
Yeah.
I mean, just in conversation with all other artists, things that I'm watching, nature. I mean, you look around and you can be inspired. I'm looking at these lines here and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, in the studio
it's
here.
Just,
yeah, our sound
boxes.
I mean,
inspiration is
it's in everywhere,
everything.
Right? So then, okay, so this is the fun thing I love about artists. Like, so you see, you work in different ways, right? You've got photography, digital media, a lot of these performance videos, sculpture, all these different things. You have something that comes to you, an impulse. What is the how do you decide where you're going to put that energy into? Which kind of art? How does that work for you?
I have just a running list. If I have an idea, I write it down, and then go back to that and think, okay, what's doable right now? Hmm. What do I have on hand? Because, again, I'm trying not to have to go out and buy a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I want to use what I have. Mm-hmm. And also, I was sharing with Jackie, I really trying to stick to things that then I can burn and that will be no more.
Oh, like your performance on Friday.
Yes. Yeah.
It's one and done. And
one
out,
and done.
Out and out and out. Mm-hmm. I love that. This is Juno Afternoon. We're talking with Maisha Callahan-Freet, who is a mixed media sculptor and performance artist from Chugiak, Alaska. Maisha is opening her show Embrace, Reflect, Release this Friday at the Alaska State Museum. There will be an opening night during First Friday from 4:30 to 7. There is a live performance that happens at 5:30. Be there or be square and miss it. And then on Saturday, there's going to be an exhibit tour with Maisha at 12:30. And is this where you, are you going to take people through all the different pieces? Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what's going to happen.
Yeah, discuss every piece.
Okay.
I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be
answer
about an hour
questions.
Or so?
Yeah, about 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, often we'll do like a slideshow, but to be in the gallery with the art, with the artist, I think is, it's not something we do often, and it's a really unique experience. So
awesome.
Hope folks can make it.
So, and Jackie, tell me again the details on how long this is going to be up and all of that good stuff.
So the exhibit will run through April 4th.
Okay.
So you got a couple months. I mean, being there for the opening to see the live performance, definitely recommend that. But we will have photographs showing that we're going to add and back into the gallery. So if you miss it, you'll be able to see an image of what happened during opening night. But you have a couple months to come see the show. And First Fridays are always free at the museum. And Saturday, this exhibit tour is free as well, as you mentioned. And following that, there is Sketching in the Museum, which is a relatively new program with our friends group. So that'll start at 1:30. So if folks want to come hear Maisha's talk and then participate in the Sketching in the Museum. Lots of things going on Saturday at the museum.
That's awesome, because the Sketching in the Museum has been going on for a few months now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and it's once a month?
Yes, and this month it's M.K. McNaughton's going to kick it off with, I think it's about 20 minutes to a half an hour demo and talking about aspects of her work or things you could focus on. And then, you know, the other hour and a half, you just get to sketch.
Absolutely cool. Maisha Callahan-Freet, what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so
congratulations
much.
On your show
oh,
here.
I appreciate it.
And break a leg on the live performance aspect of that. Really appreciate you coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Gwyneth Cheesh. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin katka ke jin talk anakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. A recent study found that about 90% of priests, ministers, and other Christian leaders in the U.S. believe that the climate is changing and that humans are at least partly responsible. But about half never mention it to their congregations.
Which is quite a stark difference between how widely accepting they are of the issue and how widely inactive they are in talking about it.
Lead author Stylianos Seropoulos of Arizona State University says climate change is highly politicized.
My own thinking is that there are concerns about the role of the church as sort of being politically neutral.
But he says by not talking about it,
they are reinforcing this climate of silence where religious congregants believe that because they don't hear anything about the issue, then that everything is fine, or that the religious leader does not care about the issue, which then just reinforces the status quo, which is to not care and not act.
The study also found that when people learn that many Christian leaders believe in human-caused climate change, they're more likely to see climate action as part of their faith. So Seropoulos says religious leaders can guide the public's views on climate change simply by sharing their own beliefs.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication.
To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakul'at Florence Marks Shakley. And the word this week is Ayauditi.
Ayauditi.
That means it's stormy. And here is a sentence. It's very stormy today. Let's hear it again.
Ayauditi.
It's stormy. Gunnish Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and the University of Alaska at Southeast for this audio.
Kakashat Florence Mark Shakley is Shukach Adi and a child of a Chukunidi man. She grew up on Mark's trail in a family that used Tlingit as the primary language and were involved in documenting, teaching, and publishing in Tlingit. She has taught the language at all levels and has served as the teacher of teachers in the Juneau area for decades now.
And please tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I am your host, Boston Christopher. As a group of four women, three artists, and one marine biologist, dedicated to bringing the beauty of the deep sea to the public through international art and science events, the Unseen Ocean Collective Art Show opens this Friday at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center gallery space. It features coral and sponge gardens teeming with life and paintings, sculpture, and video projections. And that's just the beginning of what this group is all about. And I am joined now in the studio by one of the artists, Megan Jones. Gunnish Chish, Shwasiati. How are you, Megan?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And then I also have in here Lara Beckman, who is the scientist behind this whole thing. Shwasiati, Lara, how are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Okay. You're from Germany, but you live in Sweden now, which is where this show first began. So who had the impetus idea? Where's the inciting action? How did this all begin?
Yeah, maybe I can start. So I have been working with Alaska's corals and sponges and like the ecosystems just in the deep sea of Alaska for quite a while now, since I started my PhD research, so 3 years ago. And this has been a collaboration between Sweden and my supervisor in Sweden and colleagues in Juneau, Alaska, and at NOAA that works with Alaska fisheries. And so I've been working with video footage from Alaska's deep sea. Then I was looking at this and I thought I can't be the only one looking at this, honestly. So I reached out to a local artist here in Juneau while I was here for my work. That's how it started. And then I, brought Megan along and another artist.
That is pretty amazing. And what is it about the coral and the reef, and what is it about that gets you going?
I think it's just the life down there, because it's something that I think a lot of us never think about. So maybe I can start with the deep sea, because that's something that's very inaccessible for us and we never think about. But actually, it's 50% of our planet, which is deeper than 200 meters. And Alaska's seafloor, for example, is 80%. So it's the majority, which is deep sea, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And for me, it's just this life that is down there, which we never think about, but it's very related to us. So a lot of fish, for example, rely on these coral ecosystems. And it's just, it's just a wonderful nature.
I mean, one of those things is like, you know, when you see the videos of the deep sea and the teeming life that's down there, and the fascinating, the fishes swimming through the coral. All that, I mean, you want to do it, right? Not everybody gets that chance, right? But it's like you do think, I have the thought sometimes, I'm like, that's a whole other world down there, right? Yep. That's like so different than... Mm-hmm. what is on the land sometimes. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you're studying about it?
So I'm studying very broad. I'm focusing on the diversity of corals and sponges, but also their biology. So very basic, like how do they reproduce? How do they recruit new juveniles or babies to grow? So it's very, foundational biology.
Because, and how do they do that? How do they recruit new babies?
Yeah, we don't know. I can tell you that. it's very hard to study.
So this is the Unseen Ocean Collective Art Show. It's opening this Friday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Lara is the scientist behind this whole thing. But then, Megan, how did you get involved as an artist?
Well, so Lara had posted on an online science and art forum that we were both members of. And she posted, she said, I have this beautiful coral research, and I'm looking for artists who are interested in collaborating. And I thought, I don't know anything about deep sea corals.
Yeah.
I'm in. Like, let's do this.
Because the colors are probably amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible colors and just lots of geometry. You know, everything's based, there's octocorals, so they're based on eight. So everything has eight tentacles. And it's just incredible and very translucent, and you see through them, and you see sort of their gametes going on. Beautiful. So she shared the video with me, and I was hooked. I was totally in forevermore. And so then I work primarily in acrylic on canvas, and so that's what I have brought. I have eight paintings here.
Oh, okay, great. And this show, is there going to be some of the other artists' work this Friday as well?
Yes, we have work from Kirsten Keller, who is a local Juno resident.
Okay.
And she does these beautiful, really elevated scientific illustration work. Watercolor and gouache paintings are very delicate. And then Nilanjana Das, she is from Corvallis, Oregon, and she's taking her PhD in microbiology in fish parasites. So she's kind of both. So she's an artist and a scientist as well. And she has made some incredible sculptures of Paragorgia, which is a bubblegum coral, and a sea pen, Umbalula sea pen, a couple other ones.
Different sponges.
Yeah, different sponges. Mm-hmm. So she has the sculpture cornered.
Yeah.
And we have paintings and sculptures, and then a beautiful projection of all of this deep sea footage so you can see it for yourself.
That's amazing. And Megan, where are you from?
I'm originally from Canada, but I live in Spokane, Washington right now.
Okay, so Spokane, Oregon, Juneau, West Coasty,
yes.
Seems like, and then Sweden.
Yes. Yes. And the other one.
That's pretty amazing. So when the show opened in Sweden, did you all go over there?
No, we weren't able to go.
Yeah.
And it was actually at a symposium, which was a little bit more of a closed situation for attendees only.
Yeah, it was very short. It was only 3 days, and it was just to see how,
This work that you're doing and how you collaborated with these artists and stuff.
Yeah.
So, Megan, you said you work primarily in acrylic, right? Is that what you said?
Yes.
So, what did you use as, like, the inspiration? Did you use the video to try to create? Were you trying to recreate, or were you taking it and making it into something else? I'm curious about your process, basically.
Right. So I did work primarily from video. Many of the times I would be watching the video and pausing a huge sequence of images, and then I would sort of knit them together in Photoshop to get exactly what I wanted. And then I would recreate them. I would say that with my style, it's 75% accuracy, 25% magic. That's where we're at. It's just because I get, by the end, it's like, the first 75% is like, okay, what color is it? What color is it really? And then the last 25 is like, what color could it be?
You know,
let's get it in there. Let's make it, because it needs to function as a painting. It's not a photograph anymore, right?
Right.
It needs to be a beautiful painting. And for me, my whole sort of inspiration is like rebranding the deep sea a little bit. We hear a lot about how scary it is. We hear a lot about things with big teeth. We hear a lot about, you know, the deep sea is like a terrifying abyssal place. It's not. It's beautiful.
Well, the Little Mermaid might say otherwise.
She might, but I don't think she went that deep. But I would like to show people just how fascinating it is.
Right.
These translucent creatures and how colorful they are and how they're such a product of the environment that they live in that we can't live in. And that's fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And the idea of the colors, let's talk about that a little bit.
Like, yes.
Are there colors that are in there in the, you know, the deep sea, the corals and the sponges and stuff that you have difficulty making that color? Is it hard to match the color, or is it, are they just so vibrant that you're taking like, okay, I can get that purple, I can make this and that kind of thing? I'm just curious.
They're
about
pretty
that.
Vibrant.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, it's pretty impressive how vibrant they are. I think the other thing to remember too is because it's the deep sea, there is no natural light. We cannot bring natural light to the deep sea, and we cannot bring the deep sea to natural light. It's impossible. The two things cannot coexist. So we only see it through the lights we use.
So like these, the film, the cameras.
Floodlights.
Yeah.
So it's often very dramatic lighting. It can be very harsh lighting. But I think it's really interesting when you get in there and you have these deep cast shadows and these very, very bright white highlights. And then there can be a huge spectrum of color in there, especially with some animals like octopus, right? They're making their own color. They're bringing their own luminescence to the party.
The only word I remember from art class in college, chiaroscuro, right? Like sort of the dark
exactly.
and the light, right?
You have found the perfect word to describe exactly what I am talking
about.
Hey,
look at that. My well education
done.
Paid off.
Well done. That is exactly what I'm speaking of.
So the show is going to be this Friday. You two will be there. Are the other artists going to be there as well?
We are all there. Yeah.
You're all there. That's going to be amazing. So you can meet everybody on Friday from 4 to 7 over at the Juno Arts and Culture Gallery space. The show will be up for the month, I guess.
Correct.
So was the other person that was involved here from Juno, is that who applied to have the show here, Kirsten?
Yes.
So she applied at the Jack to have the show there, right? Because they do the series and stuff and thought it would be a good thing to show.
Yeah.
Right?
That's and the
so
show
cool.
is going to each of our homes.
Oh,
yeah.
I
so it's
see.
Been
okay.
in Sweden, and then it's here in Juneau, and then in April of 26, it's coming to Spokane. And then over the summer, it's going to Oregon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's going to be great that it's going everywhere. And, of course, you can go to unseenoceancollective.com and follow along the journey. Is there also, like, an Instagram and stuff?
Yep, same name.
Same name.
Unseen Ocean Collective. We try to post on there as much as we can handle.
Is there future collaboration here possible in terms of, like, this seems like something broad in terms of the ability, because you're discovering more as you do your research. And then so there's more.
Absolutely.
There's more coming.
Yeah. We're not quite sure what it looks like yet, because somebody has to finish their PhD.
Yeah.
It's 100% not me, but it sounds busy and complicated.
Yes.
So we're trying to make space for everybody to get done their life things that they have to do, but we're also trying to pursue what we want to do relentlessly.
Yeah. I love that. And Laura, what is your plan after you complete your PhD? What is it that you hope to do with your work?
I would like to continue the research, definitely, maybe even in Alaska, because it's really a niche work. There are not a lot of people doing this type of work. That's why we come in from Sweden, because there are very few experts working on these ecosystems. So I would really like to continue working with this, especially in Alaska, because it's such an amazing place.
And you have the, what is it that you're going to, how is the research going to be helpful? What is it going to do eventually? That's what I'm curious about.
So this type of research can help in, like, management decisions, for example. So saying, okay, this area, for example, is very important for, for example, an essential fish habitat. So it's important for fish. And so we should maybe protect this. Because right now in Alaska, a lot of these protected areas are based on a precautionary approach. So we think, okay, there might be corals and sponges, and that's why we protect it. But we don't really know if that's the case or not.
I see. So like management and policy
exactly.
and things like that.
Yes, yes.
And I just thought of this. This is just, and this might be just my layman question here, but like it's so dark down there, like you said, Megan, and so I'm so curious, like, if it's so dark down there, why is everything so colorful?
That is a great question. And a lot of it is in shades of red or orange, because that's the first color you lose as you go down the water column.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because all the blue cancels it out. And so red, orange, it's invisible in
that's
the deep
amazing.
Ocean. Utterly invisible. And so that's why a lot of it's really bright.
Wow.
Red and orange. Yeah.
That is kind of cool.
It's cool.
That is really cool.
That's science at work.
I love the fact that, Laura, that you had this idea like, oh, maybe I work with some artists. Mm-hmm. And you just put the call out there and then you make something happen. Mm-hmm. And then you meet these wonderful people from around the world. Mostly West Coast. Shout out West Coast. And that becomes a project like this. Mm-hmm. There's just something really amazing about that. What does that feel like, the payoff of that for you?
Yeah, as you say, it's amazing. I learned so much also from the artists, just having a different perspective on the work, on the research that we do, and also getting this insight from the artists, how they work and how they approach their work or their projects. It's really interesting. I gain a lot from this collaboration. Yeah.
And Megan, had you worked with a scientist before to create art?
No, not in this capacity. I had been given photographs to work from, but I'd never had sort of firsthand access to like, well, what is that? Well, what is that? Well, no, tell me more about this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we were sitting around last night eating pizza, watching videos, and just be like, tell me what that is. Tell me what that is. It's amazing. I love it so much.
That is so cool. And so what's been the best takeaway for you, Megan?
Oh, it's just this whole brand new world.
Yeah.
Really, it's just, it's pretty magical. And like you said, to just sort of be able to take this idea and this small collaboration and say, how big could we go?
Mm.
And then everybody in the collective showing up and saying, I'll do my part to make it bigger.
Right.
I'll do my part to make it bigger. And then we can take this research, which is really important, transmuted through art to the public. And especially to Juno. I'm so excited to be here and say, look what's in your backyard.
Right.
Like, look right out there. Mm-hmm. Right out there.
That's so
That's
cool.
Right out there. And you never knew it was there, and you should love it.
Yeah.
You should love it.
Yeah.
It's the Unseen Ocean Collective Art Show. It's opening this first Friday at the Juno Arts and Culture Center the center's gallery space. It features coral and sponge gardens teeming with life and paintings, sculpture and video projections. And it's a traveling art show. It's here in Juno. It'll be here for the month. Laura Beckman and Megan Jones, I really appreciate you coming in and telling us about it. Gunnath Cheesh, happy opening. And best of luck in all the future endeavors of science and art coming together. We need more of that.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, Gunnath Cheesh, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we have some more First Friday previews, and we'll meet one of the new gynecologists here at Bartlett Regional Hospital. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives over on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh, and have a fantastic Juno Wednesday evening. We'll be right back.